Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast of Real Recovery. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help. When I was younger,
hello and welcome to Real Recovery. Bill and George, special call out to the Beatles for that fine intro song for Real Recovery. George, you know, sometimes you think you're old, but we're not old because there's still two Beatles that are alive. Ringo and Paul.
Yeah.
So I feel like I have to give the Beatles thanks because if they're listening, Ringo or Paul, they might get upset.
I wonder with all the accolades they received and how great they were. That if one of them isn't being our theme song, it has to be. And I know for Ringo especially.
Yeah.
So, it's always good to do the show with you and to see Ryan. And we got a great show tonight.
We do.
Whatever day it is.
And Phil is in our studio, and he's going to be on the program momentarily. We always like to start with a warm greeting to everyone and an appreciation for everyone that's listening. And if you have been, if you're new to Faith Radio or you're new to Real Recovery, we have a lot of other programs at our website. You can go to myfaithradio.com and go to the Real Recovery show page, and there'll be lots of other episodes there. And if you tuned in late and maybe you didn't hear all of this, you can always go back and hear it from the beginning.
Yeah, and if you're new to the station, you're probably listening to the wrong show. This is a recovery show, real people, real problems, and a real God solution that's not stopping a behavior. It's creating a relationship with the living God that can only be done through Jesus. And we have people on every week where we have God's story in them, not their story.
Right.
And tonight is a guy that is one of my kids. He's not my kid. But he is.
And you took him under your wing.
God brought him into my life. He's a remarkable guy. You know him from the Salvation Army.
I do.
And his
he scares
story,
me, but that's okay.
Oh, well,
he scares
he should.
You too.
Oh, yeah. He knows that.
Yeah.
And, but I love the guy, and we reconnected. He's got a whole new ministry now, taking it to the other level. And you see guys who come in that you work with, and he's married, and he has kids, and he's going to church and working and has a podcast. It's truly remarkable. But the story to get there, Bill, unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. We're going to hear that tonight. But George, before we get to Phil, let's talk about a step which we try to do every week. And most of the time we get it in. And it's one of the 12 steps, which are all biblically based. So if you have heard of them, you can just rest assured they come from Scripture.
Correct.
They may look a little disguised because there's no chapter and verse with these, but they are all biblically based. So,
well said.
Thank
yes.
you, George. What step would you like to cover tonight?
I want to go with one again, and that's where we admit we're powerless over drugs, alcohol, and our life is unmanageable. And really what that is saying to you, if you are in recovery or you're looking at recovery— know that the only reason you're thinking about it is because the Spirit of the living God, the Holy Spirit, has convicted you of what you're doing and offered you hope at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody gets sober without God. There is a God. It's not you. And he has a plan for your life that's better than anything you could ever imagine. And that's where this starts. And I think tonight what we're going to hear
today
is
this afternoon.
Well, yesterday. Who can understand God is not bound by a timeline, and neither is this show.
That's so true, George.
Whoever thought this show would be in its 11th year? I thought we'd get canceled. What'd they give us, 8 weeks?
8 weeks.
Yeah.
And things weren't looking good after 3 weeks.
I thought we were dead.
I did, too.
But God resurrected us, and here we are.
Yeah.
If any man be in Christ, he's a new creation, and you're going to hear that tonight. But it's not just for Phil. It's for everyone.
Yeah.
And you got to do the work, though.
Yes. And because we have regular guests on the show that have stories of drugs and alcohol, this is not the only addictions that are out there. You can have an addiction to shopping. You can have an addiction to gambling. You can have an addiction to sex. There can be all number of addictions. But tonight we are going to have a focus on Phil's story, which does involve drugs and alcohol.
Yeah, a person could have addictions to all those.
Yeah, I wasn't looking your way.
Watching TV too much.
Yeah.
But here's the deal. If you're a Christian, you're in recovery. You don't have to be an addict, because if your life isn't different than it was when you became a Christian, you need to look at that.
Yeah. I'm going to read Romans 7:18. It says, I know that nothing good lives in me, that is, in my sinful nature, for I have the desire to do what is good, but I cannot carry it out. That is a great illustration of step one. We admitted we were powerless over our addictions. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll bring in our guest, Phil, who's sitting in our studio, and he is ready to go. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Real Recovery. So glad you're listening tonight and or today or this morning. George, you never know, do you? What time? It just doesn't matter, because just so you know, this show might be recorded for training purposes.
Mine. Yours.
Yeah. Not Ryan's, but
they're
yours are mine.
They're recording this, huh?
Yeah, they do record this for training purposes.
Yeah, I used to listen to them. I can't get them anymore, but I'll pray for that.
Yeah, and this show is sponsored by Faith Radio. Wait, they're all sponsored by Faith Radio. What am I talking about?
Yeah, it's been a good ride for us. We're in our 11th year.
March, I think. This is 11th year.
Yeah.
March starts 12th year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lord willing.
My memory's getting worse day by day, too. Yeah. And it's Bill, right?
It's Bill.
Okay, good. Yeah. You know, tonight...
You're always so pleasant.
Thank you. It's a gift.
Yeah.
I sent someone
a picture of you who's in the fashion business, and they sent back a reply, three words, out of date. So I wouldn't take that personally.
Do you know what Ralph Lauren calls that?
What?
The Heritage Collection. Because a friend of mine, who wearing an old tennis sweater the other day, and it looked pretty good. And he goes, it's Ralph Lauren Heritage.
Wow.
And I go, I got a whole drawer full of
Heritage. That's your wardrobe.
I try to have a Heritage unemployed loser look.
Yeah, you do that okay.
You know, a 65-year-old high school kid.
Yeah.
So, but what I was going to say before that snappy chatter, which I always like, is that one of the great things about being in recovery and being saved is the people you meet. And today, tonight, and tomorrow, we have a guy on our show, Phil, who's one of my favorites. And I met Phil when we were hiring down at the Salvation Army. And our listeners know, Bill, you've been going down there for 11 years.
11 years.
Speaking on Friday night, taking over for the great Ernie Larson, which was such a God thing. You were available, and you've done such a good job. And I'm interviewing for a resident manager. And Phil was highly recommended. And I asked him, what's the most important part of your job? He goes, to keep you safe.
Because you were the program director.
Yeah. And I said, good insight. He goes, George, let me tell you something. Now, he's a young kid here. He's in his 20s at the time. And he goes, there's two kinds of people. There's sharks and there's fishes. And George, I'm a shark. And I thought, this is my guy. He came in. He's well-versed in the Bible. He's in recovery. And he's a monster. And when he would walk, the water would part like Moses in the Red Sea through the guys. And he really did a great job. And I'm so excited to see him. It's like one of our kids, you know? Mm.
Well, one of your kids, maybe.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Phil, welcome to the show. I think we should just get him on, George.
Yeah. Welcome to the show.
Yeah. Hi, Phil.
How are y'all?
We're good. So, good? Yeah, Phil, I know George and I are both big fans, and you've got an incredible story. And I know everyone would like to hear it. So maybe you could take us back to the early days of young Phil when you found yourself experimenting for the very first time in some kind of drug, alcohol. How did it all start for you?
Well, it started with me. I grew up in Louisiana, and as I grew up in, let's say, a broken home. My mom and dad were never together. I never felt a lot of love as a kid. My dad didn't show me a lot of love. He didn't hug me. He didn't touch me. And my mom, she did, but I wasn't barely with my mom. My mom had alcohol problems. My dad was, you know, my dad had his problems as well. I was shifted around a lot as a kid. I didn't have a lot of stability. I was always looking for acceptance in the wrong things. And the women that my dad would have in his life would actually, you know, they had like brothers or they had nephews and they were older and they introduced me to marijuana. They introduced me to alcohol. And that's when I started to experiment with that. And then I moved, we found his brother, which is my uncle and my godfather. We found him, dead in his apartment a morning before we were going to school. And that kind of changed a lot of things. And what happened was my dad sent me to live with my mom again. And I went and lived with my mom and my dad went up to Minnesota and he came up here and he got a good job. It was a decent job. It was better than the job he had in Louisiana. And he came down and got me. And then I moved to Hastings, Minnesota from Louisiana. And I had a thick accent, real thick accent.
What'd it sound like?
Oh.
can you get it going for us?
I don't know, man. Maybe. Maybe. It comes out a little bit when I talk, especially now with what I do for work. I get to talk to people from all over.
Okay.
I get to talk to people from Alabama, Louisiana, Florida. So when I get around other people from the South, it really comes out. But,
okay.
You know, there's I got made fun of a lot and still looking for that acceptance in the wrong things and hooked up with the wrong crowd. Those were the guys that accepted me, were the guys that were skipping school. It was the guys that were drinking. It was the guys that were smoking weed. It was the guys that were doing whatever they wanted. They talked to their parents any old way. And, you know, I started to, use alcohol and,
how old are you now at this point, Phil?
I'd be 15.
15. Okay.
15.
Can I ask one more question about your uncle?
Yeah.
Were you and your dad making some kind of, welfare call because he wasn't responding. He didn't hear from him. He wasn't answering his phone. He didn't show up to work.
We were just going to check on him because he just got out of the hospital.
Okay.
For a heart deal.
Okay. So do you think he passed of a heart attack?
We know that he passed of a heart attack. Yep.
Okay. So it wasn't a suicide or
no, nothing
a drug
like
overdose
that.
Or anything?
Nothing.
Okay. No, just wanted to check.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yep. And I can kind of move quick. So I appreciate it. It was, he passed away of a massive heart attack. He was 37 years old.
Wow.
His dad, he died 31 years to the date of my dad's dad's death. So they both died on the same day.
Wow.
He had just got out of the hospital because whatever reason, I was young. I had no idea.
Yeah. And we just found out we have the same birthday.
That's right.
So I got to tell you, this is already one weird episode, George.
Yeah, I wouldn't have connected. Phil would have been born on the same day you were.
All right,
I meant that as a cut.
I felt like you meant it as a compliment, but I didn't take it that way.
No, I said I meant it as a cut.
Oh, it's a cut. Okay. Yeah. That I get.
Yeah.
All right.
It is cool, though.
It's very cool, yeah. All right.
So, yeah. Now, where was I?
You had just arrived in Hastings.
Yeah.
You were still getting picked on.
Yeah, I was getting picked on because of my accent. And then I got accepted by, you know, let's say the wrong crowd. And what happened was I just started to find my identity in the wrong things. And I started to use. And I always had these lines in the sand that I would, when I was a younger kid, my parents would smoke cigarettes. And I'd be like, well, I'm never going to smoke cigarettes. And then I started smoking cigarettes. Well, I was like, well, I'll never smoke weed. And then I started smoking weed. And then I would say, oh, well, I'm not going to drink. And then I'd start drinking. And then, you know, eventually those lines just totally got blurred. And you know, I like to say this. So the first time I ever actually took a I drank as a toddler, stole my mom's wine glasses and was found passed out by a tree. But that I don't remember that as much. The first time that I drank at a party, it was, I was 17 years old and, I got a minor consumption that night. We got popped. We got busted. And it was, I look at it now as God showing me, hey, this is your life if you continue to drink.
Heads up.
Yeah, heads up. Here's a red flag. Boom. Yep. We have these red flags, these ominous warnings that we don't see. And I didn't look at it like that until, you know, later on in life. But what happened was I got busted, and it was a flash forward of what my life would be like if I continued to drink in jails, cops, you know, prisons, institutions, things like that. So what happened was I drank, and I couldn't control my drinking. I would drink and drink and drink, and I wouldn't know what would happen. I was started to black out at a young age. And then I was introduced to Ritalin. And when I was introduced to Ritalin, I was like, wow, well, now I can drink like everybody else. I can drink like normal people.
Did you get that from a doctor or school psychologist on the street?
Okay. On the street. Ritalin on the street. It was a buddy of mine's dad who had a prescription for it, or his kid had a prescription. Somehow they got it, right?
Is Ritalin a stimulant?
Yes. Okay. It's an upper.
It's an upper, okay.
Yep. Prescribed a lot for ADHD.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep, it was. I don't know if it still is, but
okay.
Yeah, Adderall, Ritalin, kind of the same deal. And I took some Ritalin, and I was like, wow, now I can drink and not worry about blacking out. Like, I remember what I'm doing. And eventually, I was introduced to crank, meth, and then I started to use meth. And
in high school?
This was right after high school.
Okay.
Yeah, this was right after.
So did you graduate?
I did not graduate.
Okay.
They kicked me out of Hastings High School because I was 18. I was held back in school when I was a kid because my mom didn't bring me to school. She was a bartender in Louisiana, and they held me back in first grade because I didn't go to enough school. And that's when I went. That was one of the times where I went and lived with my dad.
But a lot of people get kicked out of high school. It's not a big deal on this show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got kicked
right?
out. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got kicked out. I got kicked out of high school my junior year. And you know, that's when, and I didn't, you know, I used to take pride in this. Well, at least I didn't do meth until I was 18, right? Because I was 18, and that's when I started to mess around with the crank. I was working at a candy store called Fritzy Fresh Candies. George knows all about it.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
When you say crank, does that mean heroin?
Crank is meth.
Okay, crank is
so
meth.
So you were working in Newport there.
Yep. Me and my dad my dad was living in Newport.
What year was that?
Man, I'm bad with the years. I'm thinking it was 2001. Must have been, because I was supposed to graduate 2001.
Yeah, we were out of the business by then, but I knew all those people. What were you doing for them?
I was working on a line packaging candy.
Okay.
And I was good. I mean, I was a good worker. I was always smart, but I always had a problem with not going to work and not doing what I needed to do. Like the next morning while I was at work, I was pretty good at it, but getting me to work was the problem when I was drinking and using.
Did you ever get high so you could go in with the munchies?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I used to take all kinds
candy factory. Yeah. I used to
love their Carl Budding snack, the meat, the Carl Budding meat, so the corned beef.
Did you keep that job for a while?
No, absolutely not. I was fired from that job because, I pulled, you know, using drugs and stuff like that, and I walked out. So at that point, I started to use more and more and dabble with the methamphetamine. And my dad, I was 18, and my dad said, I'm going back home. I'm going to Louisiana, or I'm going to Tennessee. He was going somewhere to live with another woman. And I was like, I'm a man now. I'm going to stay here. And my dad said, boy, you're going to end up in jail. And I didn't believe nothing my dad ever told me.
Okay.
Nothing. I never believed nothing he ever said. Didn't. I thought he was just out to get me, but he cared about me, and he cared about me in his own special way. And you know, he tried to show me as much love as he possibly could, but he didn't have a lot of love to be shown either as a kid when his dad passed away. So, you know, it just, I didn't believe nothing that he said. And then, you know, he left, and then I found myself homeless at 18 years old in Minnesota, living in cars. Going inside of like garages, like they had these apartments where they were stacked up, and underneath them were the garages. And I would break into like someone's garage that I knew, and I would sleep in their car or something. And it was in the winter, and I was 18, and it was just a sad sight. And then, sure enough, I started going to jail. I'd get drunk and I'd steal cars. I would just get drunk, and I don't know what would happen. I would just get drunk and like, I would just feel so alone. I could be like at the party, we could have 50 people around, and I would end up leaving. And then I would go car shopping, and I would look for like the keys in the car. And I would take the car with the keys in it. I would drive it around, and then I would, you know, go somewhere, and then I would go get some methamphetamine and, you know, sober up and get paranoid and ditch the car. And then eventually I started getting caught in those cars. And I got caught in a lot of those cars, and I got put in jail quite a few times. I've been to jail probably over 50 times. And each, you know, my crimes were stealing cars, DUIs. I had 3 DWIs by the time I was 21, because they caught me in stolen cars.
Under the influence.
Under the influence.
In a stolen car.
In a stolen car.
Okay. Did jail turn into prison?
Jail turned into prison. Not at first. Jail actually, I went to, that's, jail is, what I want to back up a little bit. When I was 11 years old, my dad had women in his life that would bring me to church. And when I was 11 years old, I accepted the Lord Jesus Christ into my life. I accepted him at an Awana program at a little Bible church in Lake Charles, Louisiana. And due to that, I'm a firm believer that God had never left me nor forsaken me, even though I pushed him away from my life the whole time, chasing that identity. And what happened was I ended up in jails, and then I would get in jail, and then I would use Jesus as a crutch. Jesus, get me out of this. I'm going to start reading the Bible now. I'm going to start going to Bible study. I'm going to do this and do that. And I was in jail, and Wendy Torgelson came through with the Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge Choir. And I was 19 or something like that, sitting in jail. And my PO wanted me to go to treatment. He had me set up for RS Eden, and Teen Challenge came through. I had no idea what it was about, anything. It just looked like I wanted to go there. And I called my PO and said, I'm thinking about, I would like to go to Minnesota Teen Challenge. And he said, would you really? He's like, come on, we'll get you in there right away. So he put me in Teen Challenge at 19, and I was in there.
Were you singing in the choir?
I was singing in the choir. I was loving life. Okay. I was loving life. I really was. I mean, and to be honest with you, I felt so much joy in there, and I felt so happy when I was in that program at 19. Every time that I wanted to change my life, that was always on my heart. I remember going in and out of the Washington County Jail, and I'd put on KTIS radio station, and I would tear up because the songs that were on there, we used to sing in the choir. And the Lord would just speak to my heart and just tell me, you know, it would hurt a lot. And I would get teary-eyed from listening to that. But, you know, it gave me a lot of hope, and it gave me a lot of encouragement as well. So fast forward, in and out of jail, in and out of jail. Now I'm not just dabbling with the meth. Now I'm full-blown meth addict, right? Full-blown meth slave. I pretty much stopped drinking and just have pursued meth. And I've created this identity of a meth dealer, and I could, because I couldn't work. I would always think that someone knew, they would always know, or this or that, right? I just couldn't hold down a job to save my life when I was on drugs. Some people can. I wasn't one of those people. I had to go all into it. I was an extremist, so I had to sell the drugs in order to fund my habit, pretty much. So I was pretty much using or selling drugs just to get high,
mm-hmm.
And, you know, influencing people to use those drugs and manipulating people to buy the drugs from me.
Okay. We're going to take a little break. You're listening to Real Recovery. We're awfully glad you are. This is Bill, and George is just across the way, and our guest is Phil. And when we come back, we're going to hear more of Phil's story, which is riveting. Be right back. Welcome back to Real Recovery, Bill and George. We've got our friend in studio, Phil, and quite a story, George.
Absolutely.
Yeah, a lot going on. When we last left off for the break, he was dealing meth in order to support his using habit. So we got all kinds of problems.
Stealing cars, 3 DUIs, 4 he was, what, 21?
21, yep. Yeah.
Kind of the Wayne Gretzky of driving, you know?
Yeah. So the plot is thickening. All right, let's get to the next place in the story. You're dealing and using, and then what?
So I was totally consumed by my meth addiction. I had taken on that identity. I would actually watch Scarface, stay up all night watching Scarface, and try to figure out how I could take over these towns with selling methamphetamine and influencing people. And just really working for the enemy.
But really, did you start talking like Tony Montana?
No, never that.
Did you have a little friend?
I never had a little friend back then.
Be the big crime boss?
Yeah, I thought about it. It's funny because you watch that movie and at that point, even though I watched the whole movie and I seen how his life ended.
Yeah.
He died.
It was still attractive to you, wasn't it?
It still attracted me. I didn't care about that. He died. I looked at everything before that.
Uh-huh.
And I took it on that identity, and I kind of just went off to the races with it. I started going in and out of jail, and then inside the jails, I started to take on that identity too. I started getting the tattoos. I started to take on the image of the convicted, right, or the criminal, or just the inmate. And what happened was I got sent to prison my first time for stealing cars. I got out. I had the bright idea of that I'm too smart to get caught with meth. I'll just drink because it's my God-given right. I can drink. And, you know, and then I drank. And what happens when I drink is I can't control it. And then I go back to the speed to help me manage that alcoholism that I have, right, and trying to balance that out with meth or speed. And I'm on parole. I'm not supposed to be drinking, number one. So what happens? Phil eventually goes back to prison on his second term in prison. So my first term in prison was 19 months for a stolen car, or multiple stolen cars all stacked up. And then I got out, and I went back for a fifth-degree possession for another 19 months. And then I got out again, and I decided, you know what? I'm going to just get a good girl who doesn't do meth, and I'm just going to, you know, drink and do cocaine and do all this other stuff. And as long as I'm not doing meth, I'll be fine.
Kind of settle down.
Yeah, trying like to settle down.
Yeah, that's good. Get a station wagon and no meth, just drink and do cocaine.
Yeah.
I'd love this.
Yeah.
How'd that work for you?
Oh, man, it didn't work at all. What happened was I eventually got back right back to my drug of choice was meth, because cocaine was too expensive and it didn't last that long. So I was right back to the meth, and just because I was with that girl doesn't mean anything. I didn't change anything about me, and eventually I was back to dealing meth, selling meth, and I was terrorizing this girl who I was with. And now I'm about, you know, 23, 24 years old, have no direction. I finally got my own apartment once. I held down some jobs, but I always lost my jobs due to my drinking because I wouldn't be able to go in on a Monday, or I would go on a bender on Sunday and I wouldn't go into work and I would do the no call, no show, and I would lose my job. So what would I have to do? I'd have to go back and start selling the drugs and take on that identity again. And, I eventually kicked in someone's door in the pursuit of drugs and money. And
so weapons? Or do you have weapons?
No, I didn't have any weapons. I just kicked in his door.
Okay.
I was going to go after him just regularly. But they charged me with a first-degree burglary, and I got locked up. And the girl I was with actually bailed me out. $60,000. Bailed me out. I put myself into treatment. I went to New Beginnings in Waverly, and this was my second treatment. Remember, my first one was Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge.
And you got kicked out.
Yeah, I got kicked out of Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge when I was 19 years old. I was from Louisiana, so I didn't have any family up here, and it was 4th of July. And what happened was everybody was going on pass, and the dean of the house let me go on pass with some other residents at their house in Center City or whatever. Well, me and some buddies of mine, we already were plotting. We had a hotel room lined up. We had the alcohol ready, and we went out, and I got drunk that night. I ended up stealing a car while I was in Teen Challenge. And with one of the residents with me, we got arrested in Chisago County Jail. And that's how Teen Challenge ended up for me, and they didn't let me back in there.
Yeah, Phil, let me ask you this. So you spent time in Teen Challenge. You felt the joy of the Lord. When you're doing this in Center City, what are you thinking in terms of your relationship with God and where he's taken you through this time at Teen Challenge? And you felt the joy of the Lord, and you were probably growing in your faith. What were you thinking relative to God at that point?
I definitely wasn't thinking about God at that point.
Okay.
I mean, to be honest with you, we were drinking. And we were pulling the Bible out of the Gideon's Bible in the hotel. And we were talking about the Bible with these people we were drinking with, because that's what was instilled in my head. I was in Teen Challenge for that long. So my brain had been full of scripture. But I'm drinking, partying with girls, and we're talking about God, and we're talking the Bible. But you know, we weren't living it. We were just talking about it, and I was so far away from that.
That's happened in so many guys that we've had on the show and worked with, Bill. I know it happened in my recovery that some of my friends would bum out because we'd get loaded and I'm talking about Jesus. And mm-hmm. here's where I want to go with that. I think the recovery process starts from God while you're still using. That it's instilled in there, Bill. And as weird as it seems, when you get loaded, when you're feeling your best, that's what you talk about. And God's hand is here. Phil's gone his own way, but he didn't let go of him. He didn't cast him out. Phil stepped out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still there in your heart, isn't it? So whenever I hear that, somebody's listening tonight, tomorrow, yesterday, that is thinking, I can't do this. Yeah, you can, because you got God on your side. And he who began a good work in you will be faithful to complete it. It takes a while. So you wind up going back. Okay. You didn't tell him you were in the choir and you were late for a concert.
So here's really what happened. They arrested me.
Okay.
Well, and I was with a guy, and we were, you know, I didn't stop. I was going down. As soon as I took this car, I took the car to go get drugs from the cities. I needed more meth. I needed meth because I was too drunk. So I stole the car from someone down the road. Well, they seen me take the car and they called the cops. And I hit the gas pedal. I'm going down 35 trying to head towards St. Paul from Center City or wherever we were, North Branch, I can't remember. And I was driving and the cops all were behind me. And instead of pulling over, I just continued to drive and wanted to have my last cigarette. And when they got me, they beat me down because I didn't stop, right? And they threw me in jail. Now, when I was in jail, I had warrants in all these counties, and the judge told me this, and I was in Teen Challenge. So I'm running around the jail, and I use Jesus as a crutch all the time. I was running around the jail praying, you know, reading the Bible every day. And I went to court, and the judge said, you know what, I could care less what happens to your eternal soul, Mr. Tyler, but I don't know why I'm going to do this, but I'm going to release you on your own recognizance to go to Teen Challenge if that's where you're going or whatever you're doing. I'm just going to release you on your own recognizance. So he released me, and then I had to go to another county. Then I went to another county. And when I got out, did I go to Teen Challenge? No. I called a friend who had meth, and we got high. And what happened was I got convicted, and I called Teen Challenge because I felt I was up for a couple weeks. I called an administrator there. He came to pick me up, and I went to Teen Challenge, strung out for 2 weeks, and I went and seen the director, Terry Francis. And I remember going in there, and he said, what were you doing, Mr. Tyler? And I said, I was partying. And he said, I can't have you in my program. And he kicked me out. And I mean, I was mad, resentful, very upset, very upset. Went out and destroyed my life even more many years later. And then, you know, that was before I went to prison for the first time. So that treatment was I went to Teen Challenge before I ever walked into a prison cell at all. I'd been to jail multiple times, but never prison. And then I started to go to prison. And then I went to prison after prison. And then before my third time in prison, I went to another treatment in Waverly, New Beginnings. And I did good there. And I was on bail. And you know, and the judge said, you know what, Mr. Tyler, we're not going to send you to prison. You're going to send yourself to prison if you relapse. So what happened was I was actually just going to meetings. I was going to Bible studies. I was going to alpha groups. I was going to Celebrate Recovery. I was doing all this stuff, but I didn't do anything on myself. I didn't work nothing. I didn't do nothing. I just hung around these sober people and these people in recovery expecting them to rub off on me.
Sure.
And the girl I was with, who I terrorized for 3 years, she decided she didn't want to be with me anymore now that I was, you know, changing my life around. It could have been, you know, the 40 pounds that I gained, the 40 pounds of weight I gained. Who knows? But she definitely didn't want to be with me. And I took that as, hey, I'm going to go hurt me. So I went out and I relapsed again. I went to the bar, and I didn't intend on doing cocaine that night. I just went to the bar to get drunk. I got drunk on the cocaine. I called a buddy of mine, or drunk on the alcohol, called a buddy of mine and got a sack of cocaine, stayed up all night. And eventually it went to the meth. And what happened was I was on probation for that. I was on probation because they said, hey, we're going to put 51 months over your head. But if you relapse, then we will send, you'll send yourself to prison. We're not going to send you. So I relapsed. And when I got caught, I was, oh, poor me. I need treatment. Right. And they were like, listen, we gave you an opportunity. You can get treatment in the Department of Corrections. Mm. And they sentenced me to 51 months in prison. And that was my third time in prison. Talk about depression. When you go through there for the third time, sitting in St. Cloud and E-House, and you got a new guy in your cell who's asking you all these questions, and you're answering them everything because you're the one that's been there a million times, right? Everybody asking you this stuff. And it's just, I was very depressed. And when I went in there, I had a little bit of recovery. And so I had every intention to stay sober in there. And what happened was my buddy came in with a sack of weed. He smuggled it. In prison. He smuggled it in. And how you smuggle it in is not, you swallow it, and how does it come out, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Not.
Yeah, I think
Why
we all know.
Why are you looking at me?
I'm not looking at you.
I'm looking at George, too.
Yeah.
I think we all figured it out.
When you're addicted, you do it.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's the thing.
And he brought it in, and he thought he was helping me out because my girl wasn't sending me any money. Well, why would she, right?
Yeah.
Why would she send me money? All the stuff I did to her out there. And what I was like, yeah, let me get some of it. And sure enough, you know, I'm not a slick criminal. I got 11 felonies. And my last felony that I ever committed was in 2009 in St. Cloud. They charged me with introducing contraband into a Minnesota correctional facility because I had illegal contraband in my cell. And the guy I was living with told on me because I'm not slick. He told on me, and I ended up going to segregation. I lost 30 days of good time, and I was in segregation. And that's when I filled out for a program called IFI, and they denied me. I'm like, I need help. And they denied me and sent me to Stillwater Prison. And I went to Stillwater, and that's when I got affiliated with gangs. I'd already been affiliated with them, but then I actually joined a gang in prison, joined a prison gang.
This is not going in the right direction, Phil.
Mm-mm.
A gang.
Yep.
So was it that a survival deal, or did you want to go up to the next level of being a criminal guy?
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's the thing. I just
a little
took
angry at the
hopeless
system.
Yeah. Hopeless. I look at it as, you know what? I my first time in there, my second time in there, I hung around those guys. It was one of those things where you knew who you were hanging around, so to say. You weren't hanging around certain kind of people. You knew that the guy next to you wasn't a rat, right? He wasn't what we called, you know, a child molester. He wasn't in there on a sex crime. And it was that next level, that identity that I was like, you know what? This is going to be my life. I might as well go ahead and join up with this. And I was determined to do it, and I did it. And then I continued to drink in prison. Now I'm drinking in prison. Now I'm getting tattoos in prison. We're doing Oxycontin in prison. We did ecstasy in there. We were doing all kinds of drugs inside the prison system. And I was drinking on a daily basis. And what happens when I drink? I black out, and I can't control things. And what happened was I blacked out in there, and this was I can't remember exactly when it was, but it must have been in 2009, 2010 era, around then. And I blacked out in there, and I ended up in segregation, and I don't remember how I got there. And that's when I hit my knees in that cell. That's when I cried out to God again. And I said, man, I'm still doing the same things that put me in here. I need help. And I wrote a kite to the chaplain to get a Bible. And I'm going to tell you, I didn't stay sober from that point, but God started to work in my life from that point on. So discipline gave me 90 days for a staff assault and 90 days for an inmate assault. They charged me with inciting a riot. They locked the whole prison down for a day or two. The gang that I was a part of was upset with me because I did this. I had total shame. I felt total, like, overwhelming. I just felt like I was doomed in there. And they let me out of the hole. They, in segregation, we call it the hole. And they let me out of there on a mistake made by discipline. They were supposed to give me 90 days consecutive with another 90 days. And they ended up running the 90 days concurrent with 90 days. So my seg out date should have been 3 months after they were giving me the out date.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll hear exactly what happened next with Phil. You're listening to Real Recovery. Bill and George, we'll be right back. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're joining us tonight. You're listening to Real Recovery with Bill and George. George, this is an amazing story that Phil is sharing, and I am starting to think that we have not covered all of Phil's story well tonight, and we have more to learn, and especially the hope that he has in his life right now because of what Christ has done. Mm. I think we're going to have to do part two of this. It's my guess at this point, because we don't have a lot of time left. But Phil, we want to hear more about some of the hope part of your story, and we'll maybe continue it again at a later date with part two.
Yeah, absolutely. So I cried out to God in that prison cell, and what happened was God started to work in my life. A mistake was made by discipline, and I went to an AA meeting to check in with the crew to let them know, hey, I'm out of the box, I'm out of seg. And what happened was the treatment guy that ran that treatment pulled me in and said, hey, I saved a bed for you in the treatment for some reason, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to refuse treatment right there because I would have lost 30 days of good time. So I said, all right. And long story short, I went to treatment back there. And when I went to treatment back there, God started to work on my heart. And what happened was I was introduced to a man who mentored me, who had a life sentence, and he would sit me down every day and he would let me know that I did not have to come back, that I had an opportunity to get out, and he didn't have that opportunity to get out. And he through talking with him, I realized that I had secured a spot for me to come back to a place that I didn't like. And I felt hopeless. I'm like, wow. And I surrendered to that program in there, and I did whatever they told me to do. And the Teen Challenge Choir came through that program, and it gave me some hope, and it made me realize, hey, I need more than this when I get out. So what I did was I filled out for Teen Challenge when I got out, and they didn't let me go there. But what happened was they let me go to Midwest Challenge, which is called Life for Builders now. It's a Christian transitional house. So I paroled there. And I went there, and I surrendered to that program as well. And then they encouraged volunteering. And that's where I met George. I started to volunteer because I was going to school to be an addiction counselor. And I started to volunteer for the Salvation Army, ARC, at their Christian 12-step. And that's when I met George, and then I transitioned from the Life for Builders program to residential manager after George hired me and I answered the question properly that he asked.
Just like in here, you're protecting me from Bill. Okay, so there's a lot here. I want to go back on this a little bit. What was the program? Was it called Atlantis?
Atlantis, yep.
And what did they do? What was the method that they used?
It was a cognitive behavioral therapy. So it focused on addictive thinking, criminal thinking patterns, right?
Did you have both?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. All of that. And what it was the it taught me how to break the convict code. It taught me how to have integrity, to do the right thing when no one's looking, because I was one of those guys where if you weren't watching me, I didn't have to do the right thing, and I didn't want to do it, because the right thing for a guy like me was hard to do. It took courage for me to do the right thing. It took courage for me to walk away from a fight. It took courage for me to stick up for someone that was getting picked on, right? it took courage for me to do the right thing because I was so used to doing the wrong thing. It was real easy for me to go pick up the bottle. It was real easy for me to lash out on someone. It was real easy for me to turn a molehill into a mountain.
You know, we had Dr. Tim Walsh of Teen Challenge on our program. We've had him on several times, Bill. And you remember the show that he talked about addictive thinking and criminal thinking?
Yep. I do remember that.
And one of the problems that we see in secular treatment centers where I worked and Christian agencies is we treat the addiction, but there's still the criminal thinking. And a lot of the guys we work with, they can stop using drugs. Kind of look like Raymond Reddington today. I feel like I'm going to get whacked tonight. And they still think like criminals, and it's half the job. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
So how do you stop thinking like a criminal?
Transforming of your mind.
That's right.
Transforming. That's how you did it.
Exactly.
Well, one of my things was I was sitting back in that treatment center, and one of my this was a legit solution for me. I'm going to parole to Louisiana where the parole is less, right? It's lax. I'm going to parole to my dad's, and then I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to get a plug down there where I can get drugs for cheap, and I'm going to bring them up. And that, and the Spirit of God spoke to my heart and said, you putting yourself right back in here. You're already putting yourself right back in here. And that was another thing where I was like, man, I'm hopeless. Like this is how I'm thinking. I need someone else to think for me. So I listened to their direction, and that was, I just surrendered. And I felt like when I surrendered, you know, I not only surrendered to God, but I surrendered to the institutions that I was in. Their program rules and what they taught me that told me to do, because I'm gonna be real with you. I had no idea how to stay out of prison. I had no idea how to not sell drugs. I had no idea how to not be a criminal. I had no idea how to be a successful person in society. I was in a place where murderers were, where sex offenders were, where rapists were, and I was right there with them, and I tried to act like I was better than them, and I wasn't. And that was the problem. I wasn't better than none of them. You know what I mean? And I tried to put myself on a pedestal, but I was a piece of garbage sitting in there. And I had to really realize that. And when I really took that in, God transformed my heart. You know, God started to work on me because I was humble enough. I was humble. I was definitely humble.
So the thinking about going to Louisiana and getting some stuff and coming back, is that the criminal thinking of something for nothing? I want to...
Yeah, that, you know, instant gratification.
Yep.
I want to the easy way out is what I say now. Yeah. Today when I speak, I say I thought I was a tough guy. I did. I took pride in it.
You were a tough guy, Phil.
Yeah, that's what I thought, but I was really a coward though.
Interesting.
Yeah. I was really the biggest coward walking around.
Convince me you weren't. I'm still convinced.
Yeah.
Really interesting story how God set that up, Bill, that he got into a treatment program by a clerical mistake. This guy has a bed. God arranges for a guy who's a lifer. He's not getting out to tell him, yeah, but you have a choice, Phil. It's great stuff.
It's a great story. And I think the best thing to do, because we're almost out of time, is to invite Phil back, George, if you think this is a good idea.
I do, if Phil does, because you and I are still afraid of him. So, yeah, but so we'd love to have you come back.
We're going to do whatever he can. Yeah. To hear more of the story, because what's really exciting is the way Jesus has transformed Phil's heart and his mind and his life, and the purpose that he has now and what God has him doing is so interesting. And I think that's going to be something we can celebrate more next time he's on for part two.
Great.
Yeah.
I'll be back.
You will be.
For those who, why, what, are you going to get rid of me?
No.
It sounded like you're going to have me hit.
No, I have no intention of getting rid of you. But Phil, thank you so much for doing the show. And we will have you back for part two.
Great.
And George, that wraps up another award-winning show of Real Recovery. Thanks for joining us tonight. We will be back at some point with Phil, part two. Have a great night, and we'll see you next time.
I didn't do, but I continue learning. I never meant to do those things to you, and so I have to say before I go.
Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.